So hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Royal Meteorological Society's podcast. My name's Richard, I'm the digital guy here and...
Liz Bentley, Chief Executive here at the Royal Met Society. So welcome back for podcast number 2. We still would like to have a name for this series, so any suggestions on a postcard please?
Yeah, or a tweet or various other methods. In this episode, we just had an interview with a couple of members of our climate science special interest group, David Warrilow and Nigel Arnell.
Yeah, so the special interest group was set up last year, actually. It's a relatively new special interest group, but the main focus of this interview was around a special issue that we have launched in November 2017, and this is a special issue of weather focusing on climate change. And David Warrilow was the guest editor for the journal, and Nigel Arnell was involved in one of the papers. So it was an opportunity to talk a bit about climate science, but the main focus of the interview was around the special issue and some of the papers that we've seen. If you want to find out more about the journal itself, a lot of the articles are free to view online, and I'd encourage you to go and look at our journal's hub. So the website for that is www.rmetsjournals.org, and you'll see all the different journals that the Society produces. We have 7 international journals, but if you focus down the page, you'll see the Weather Journal. If you click on that, it'll take you to the November issue. It's got a lovely picture on the front of Hurricane Irma, which you may remember was one of the high impact hurricanes that affected the Caribbean and also Florida during this year's hurricane season. So I'd encourage you to go and have a look at the articles on there.
Great, and it was a really interesting interview, so let's get into that. So we're here at the headquarters of the Royal Meteorological Society in Reading. We have a couple of esteemed guests with us today. We have David Warrilow, who spent his early career at the Met Office researching climate models and hydrometeorology. He then was a senior advisor on climate and air pollution in central government for a number of years, and he is now the chair of our Climate Science Special Interest Group. And we also have Professor Nigel Arnell from the Department of Meteorology and the Walker Institute at the University of Reading. We also have Liz Bentley, who's our Chief Executive. So we had you guys here today for the meeting of the Climate Science Special Interest Group, and we're going to ask you some questions about the upcoming edition of Weather.
It's an opportunity, really, to look at the special issue that we're about to publish, the November 2017 special issue of Weather on climate change. And David, you were asked, probably 12 months ago now, to be the guest editor for this special issue. I just wanted to kind of get a feel for the motivations behind, you know, why you felt it was important that the Society published a special issue on climate science.
Well, I think that the Society has been publishing material on climate for some time, but I felt that its emphasis has more or less been on weather for quite a long period of time. So I think that it would be useful to actually make a stand and present the Society's legitimate views on climate change and actually encourage a sort of overview of the subject, if possible, in one issue of weather. And to do it at a time when there was meetings of the Conference of the Parties in Bonn, mm-hmm. so that it was available to negotiators to say, well, you know, these are some of the recent signs, this is what is actually happening, and therefore it's relevant to them.
Mm-hmm. And obviously climate change is something that's been discussed publicly and widely, and increasing, as you say, the number of submissions of articles on climate change and climate science to both Weather but other society journals is increasing. So I guess, how significant an issue do you think climate change is?
Well, I think if you consider the recent events such as the hurricanes in the Atlantic and the melting of Arctic sea ice and so on, and ongoing sea level rise, there hardly seems to be a month that goes past without some weather event that can be tied to climate change. And so I think that increasingly we are seeing the impact of climate change across the world. It doesn't happen evidently all the time, it's not obvious, but in terms of extreme events, many more people are being affected by climate change, and the projections are that it will become considerably greater if we do nothing about it. So I think it's an extremely important and serious issue.
So I guess one of the questions that a lot of people ask is, how certain are we that humans are the cause of climate change?
Well, the paper that I have in the forthcoming Weather actually covers that issue. And in fact, I have a table which shows what the IPCC has said about human involvement in climate change since its first report in 1990. And what's evident is that you go through each report, and there's been five of these now, the understanding of the scientific community and the ability to make a strong statement about human involvement in climate change has only increased. So people have crawled over this now for 20 odd years, and the strength of the argument is very much that there's very clear evidence that the increase in greenhouse gases from human activities has actually warmed the planet.
Nigel, would you agree with that?
Oh yes, I agree with that very much so. And it's very convincing evidence that the general trend towards increasing temperatures is largely influenced by human activity. Mm-hmm. There are other things going on as well, such as the El Nino and other variations in the climate system, things like the occasional volcanoes and so on. So there are other things that influence weather and climate, but the underlying trend, we are pretty convinced, is very much influenced by human activities. That doesn't mean that every event that we see, though, is caused by climate change. So it's particularly difficult to see whether any droughts or floods, for example, are directly caused by climate change, because as we know, rainfall varies quite dramatically from year to year, from place to place, and picking up a climate change signal in that is much more difficult. But again, if we were to take the long view, look at the long trends, then we're pretty convinced that climate change is going to affect the rainfall patterns and other features of atmospheric circulation over the next few decades.
Mm-hmm. And climate modelling has advanced enormously over recent decades, but how much can we trust those predictions?
Well, models are what they are. They are a representation mathematically of the world. Mm-hmm. You have to make a number of simplifying assumptions to be able to do the job within the power of computers that we have, and they are extremely sophisticated and complex models. They're based on fundamental physical laws that we understand. Putting them together is the real challenge. And of course, we have to, as I say, make approximations in certain places, because we can't, you know, be explicit about all the factors that affect the climate system. But the important thing is to actually be able to run a model which is self-standing, that is not statistical, it's not based on past data, but based on physical principles, and actually reproduce the main features of the climate system. And today's models can certainly do that with a fair degree of believability.
Yeah, and also influenced by what we're trying to ask of the models. So if we're trying to say what's the effect of increasing emissions on global average temperatures, mm-hmm. then the models are really quite, we think, quite reliable, because they're averaged over large areas, they're quite a robust signal. If we're trying to work out what's going to happen to weather in Reading on the 12th of November in 2043, then obviously the model projections are going to be very, very, very unreliable. Mm-hmm. So it depends on what you're trying to use the models for. If we're trying to do things like attribute events to climate change, then the models are increasingly reliable. If we're trying to make big long-term projections of change in temperature and big changes in rainfall patterns, the models are quite reliable. If we're trying to work out what's happening at a place to some very specific measure of weather, then the models can be quite uncertain, and we have to combine information from lots of different models and lots of different approaches if we're trying to be to make projections of what might happen at a place. So it depends on the question we're asking, really, yeah, how reliable the models are.
Mm-hmm. So what models allow you to do is they allow you to test different hypotheses and test different circumstances. We only have one world, and we can wait for 100 years to see what greenhouse gases might do to it, but by that time it's too late for us to do anything about it. So what we can do now is look at future scenarios. We can say, imagine we reduce all our emissions, or imagine we just let things go as they are, mm-hmm. and see what the climate comes out of it. It's not going to be exact, it's not a forecast as such, but it helps us understand what the potential problems and risks might be. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So let's talk about the special issue itself. So there were five papers that are published, four longer papers and a slightly shorter one. Both of you were involved as authors on two of the papers. So can we start by just talking about the papers that you either wrote or co-authored with? David, maybe you want to talk a little bit about
your
paper.
Well, yes. I mean, although I'm the guest editor, I also produced a paper for the special issue. And my theme was about the way in which science has actually impinged on the political process. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, people are very aware of the science and people are very aware of the politics of climate change, but how did the two interact with one another? And it's very clear as you look back over the years that the scientific community had a very strong role in, first of all, raising awareness of climate change as a potential issue, but also in helping people understand why it was a problem, but also pointing out the solutions that we might be able to introduce to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. And Nigel?
Well, our paper, which describes a research programme that the government commissioned, essentially works the other way. It's saying, to what extent can policy ask questions of science? Mm-hmm. And what we did in this project that was funded by the Department for Energy and Climate Change, as it was at the time, which essentially wanted to find out what do we mean by dangerous climate change? What sorts of things, what sort of pathways would we have to follow to avoid dangerous climate change and so on? And of course, we know there's a lot of literature out there. The IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reports, assess large volumes of literature. Mm-hmm. But often this research is done from a research perspective to answer a research question. And DEC were interested in a number of policy questions, and they wanted us to try and draw together evidence in terms of the questions that they were interested in rather than the questions that scientists might be interested in. So the programme was looking at essentially what is meant by dangerous climate change, what a dangerous climate change would look like, and how we could come up with pathways which would seek to avoid that. And what we do in the paper is provide quite a high-level summary of some of the conclusions that we drew in that study. And the study was a combination of approaches where we looked at some existing research, some work that other people had done, and interpreted it in the terms of the questions that the government asked. And we also did some new research, but typically using existing procedures, existing models and so on. So it's like a bespoke activity. And we were looking at what sorts of dangerous climate changes might mean, what sort of things could happen. We were looking particularly at things like what was the chance of changes in tropical forests, which would then subsequently lead to big feedback with the atmospheric system, mm-hmm. what happens to ice sheets in the Arctic and so on. Mm-hmm. This was mostly drawing on the literature. And we basically concluded that the evidence is still pretty uncertain as to where these thresholds might be. Mm-hmm. But they may be some significant thresholds, and some of the other papers in the special issue look particularly at ice sheets. We also looked at what sort of impacts you might get under high emissions or low emissions. And that's, in some senses, more straightforward to calculate, but they're still quite uncertain, largely because of the modelling reasons we talked about earlier. Their models are good at the big picture, but the detail, mm-hmm. For example, in rainfall change can be quite specific. So we're looking at what the consequences might be under a high emissions world and how they would compare to a low emissions world. And we're also looking at what sorts of activities or actions would be needed in order to reduce emissions, mm-hmm. focusing not so much on the energy technology side, but on what are the things that are related to the natural world, mm-hmm. That we need to do in order to reduce emissions. Because one of the things that we concluded from our analysis of the evidence was that if you're going to reduce emissions in such a way to hit low temperature targets, then we're going to need quite a lot of what's called negative emissions, yes. technologies, which are essentially measures to take CO2 out of the atmosphere rather than put it in. And that is obviously rather challenging. And one of the ways potentially to do that is with this technology called BECCS, which actually means you plant bioenergy crops, use those crops to generate energy, and then you sequester the carbon that's come out when you burn those crops and stick it back in the ground.
Okay.
So it's like creating coal.
Yes.
Over a shorter time period. And the complication is, of course, you need land to do this, and that land is often in competition with agriculture or conservation purposes, and there are physical constraints on mm-hmm. how much BECCS you can do. There's no point cutting down a forest, releasing the carbon, yes. in order to plant BECCS. So we're looking at the various constraints that you have on the physical system on our ability to reduce emissions in such a way to hit targets. Mm-hmm. And we found through our analysis that actually there are some quite significant constraints on BECCS. You can't do it everywhere. Mm-hmm. It becomes counterproductive, and that potentially influences the rate at which we can lower emissions. There are other technologies that you can use to reduce emissions, but it's quite difficult to get down to the negative emissions that we might need to have the low temperature targets.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, Nigel, that you'll be at the COP in November in Bonn. What's your role there?
Well, I'm going to COP primarily to talk about another project, which is linked actually to the work that we describe in our paper in the weather special issue, which is looking at what are the risks posed by particularly high-end climate change scenarios. And it's an activity that we're doing jointly between the UK and the Chinese government,
okay,
where we're sort of trying to take a consistent approach to try and characterise these risks. Mm-hmm. So we are going to do what's known as a side event at COP, where we present the results of our UK-Chinese project to hopefully an interested audience, and we get some feedback again. Because the thing that we're particularly interested in is how do we do the science and present the science in a way that is accessible to people who are making decisions. Mm-hmm. That might influence the sorts of metrics we use. It might influence the questions we ask. We know it's going to influence the way we present our results.
Excellent. So, David, I guess as guest editor, there are obviously other papers in the journal. Would you like to just highlight some of the interesting points that are brought out in the other papers?
Yes, I think the other important paper, they're all important, is one on what have we observed about climate change over the last 100 years and updating the work that was published in the IPCC report in 2013. And that's from Tim Osborne and colleagues at the Climate Research Unit at the University of East Anglia. And it's very clear that the ongoing rise of temperature continues. It's been very strongly affected by El Nino in the last few years. But what's very clear is that the idea that there's been some sort of slowdown in climate is just not really there. There may have been a temporary slowing down, but it's not lasted. And in fact, we're now into extremely high temperatures. The other paper, which I think is interesting, is one from Hannah mm-hmm. et al. And it looks at the potential impact of losing Arctic sea ice on the weather of the mid-latitudes. And so really it's where we start to think about the nitty-gritty of climate change affecting weather systems and the weather we get on a day-by-day basis. Yep. And there are some suggestions that the melting of the sea ice has slowed the general progression of the long waves that affect the depressions that cross the country mm-hmm. and making our patterns of weather slightly more sluggish. Now, I think there's a lot of evidence still to be looked into to really convince ourselves that this is happening, but there's some tantalising suggestions that there is something in this.
Excellent. And there's also a short article that Emily Shipper led with Peter Stott and Dan Mitchell, which is very current, obviously, looking at the hurricane season that's just gone, 2017. So really trying to look at whether, you know, climate change has had an impact on what has been a very topical hurricane season.
Well, that's right. In fact, I asked Emily and Dan to prepare the paper once we'd seen the extreme hurricanes that had affected the United States and the Caribbean. And they produced that in very short time, actually. So it's an attempt to sort of take stock and set these extreme storms in context, because they are, and in fact, quite amazingly, even as that was being written, we had the hurricane that affected Ireland and then across the UK. So
that's right.
It's looking back at the Atlantic season, it's really quite an unusual season.
Mm. So we're here this afternoon. We've got the Climate Science Special Interest Group, which David, you chair, and Nigel, you sit on that group. There are obviously other activities. We've talked about the special issue of weather on climate change, but there are other activities that the Royal Met Society undertakes around climate science. So I just wondered if you could give us a brief summary of the Climate Science Special Interest Group and some of those activities that we've led over the last few years.
So the Special Interest Group was set up last year to develop climate science work within the society and to advise members about climate change. We've done quite a bit. We've contributed to the Ladybird book on climate change. Mm-hmm. We have produced this special issue, and we're going to have a conference in January 18, which will, to some extent, mirror some aspects of the special issue, but actually look at the whole issue of, you know, how climate is changing, what the risks are, and what the policy responses should be or could be. We're thinking today about what further work we will do in the coming years and how we can enhance the work of the society on climate change.
And the Climate Science Comms Group have been active since about 2011-2012 and are currently quite actively producing a series of briefing papers on different topics around climate science, but also were instigators of communiques and statements that the Society has led. There was one in 2015 ahead of the Paris Summit that we led a coalition of learned societies in the UK from a wide range of different disciplines, so not just science but also humanities, arts, medics, engineers, to put out a statement, a one-page statement on climate, the state of the climate and the action that was required ahead of the Paris Summit. And we also led one earlier this year as well, which was more of an international statement, so pulling the international Met societies together. And there were 33 of those that signed up to, a one-page statement. But the Society was very much taking the lead on those. And I think something that certainly as Chief Executive of the Society, I've been very proud of, that we've been able to kind of steer these things forward, which are quite difficult things to do. So can I thank you both for your time this afternoon? I'm conscious that our meeting's about to start, so we do need to wrap up here. So again, thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So that was a really interesting podcast. And for those of you who are very observant, you may have picked up the leaf blower that was going on outside the Royal Met Society's building during the broadcast itself. Hopefully not too disrupting for you during the podcast. But a really interesting podcast talking about climate science. And the Royal Met Society puts on a number of activities relating to climate science, and just focusing on some of the events that we've got coming up. We have a national meeting in January in London. So this is on the 17th of January, Wednesday the 17th of January at Imperial College London. And the title of the meeting is Minimising Climate Risks. And really it just gives us an update of progress since the Climate Science Report, APR, the report linked with the IPCC. And it's a few years ago now, so that was launched back in 2015. So it gives us an update of where things are. So that's the focus of that full day meeting up in London in January. We've also got a number of meetings coming up towards the end of next year. So again, there'll be a 1.5 degree report that's published by IPCC during 2018. And we're going to host a meeting on that towards the end of next year. So it'll be probably around October time in 2018. But there are lots of other national meetings that the Society is putting on over the coming months. If you're interested, we've got meetings taking place in December. Two meetings. The first one on the 6th of December is called Earth, Wind and Fire. So whether we get some music from the old band Earth, Wind and Fire, I'm not quite sure. But it's basically looking at ecosystems, the impacts of ecosystems on weather and climate. So things like the carbon and water cycle, for example. And the second meeting is on Friday the 8th of December, and this is at the Royal Astronomical Society. It's a joint meeting with RAS, and it's basically looking at the whole atmosphere. So it's becoming very apparent that both the lower, middle and upper atmosphere all interact strongly. There's a strong coupling between different levels of the atmosphere. So it's a real focus on not just the troposphere, which is where our weather is, but also that the middle and upper atmosphere and how that impacts with the troposphere itself. So lots of interesting things coming up. And if you want to find out more about the Society's events, then visit the Society's website, rmets.org/events.
And most importantly, before we go, that December the 8th meeting is the mince pies and mulled wine meeting.
No, that's Wednesday the 6th of December, the one at Imperial. Yeah, so if you want to come and listen to some Christmas carols and share in some mince pies and mulled wine and get in the festive spirit, then yes, Imperial College, 6th of December.
Great. Thanks very much for listening. See you next time.